Okay, the next item, number five, multiple season big game permits. This is a rule briefing and a public hearing. And if you would all just, if you're going to carry on conversations, please do it in the hallway so we can carry on our meeting.
Both sides making good points. You gotta make your own mind up.
Okay, it looks like we have Dave Ware here, our game division manager, to brief us on this item.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the commission. I'd like to welcome a couple of new commissioners. My name's Dave Ware. I'm the game division manager for the Department of Fish and Wildlife, and so therefore handle most of the hunting issues, or at least my staff and I and the regions and everybody else that handle the hunting issues. And I won't take that mass exodus as an indication of lack of importance of this next subject item. But today I'm here to talk about multiple season permits. These are permits that allow hunters to hunt in each of the three weapon type hunts that we have: archery, muzzleloader, and modern firearm hunts. So first today, I was going to kind of give you a brief history of where we've been with the structure of our license documents and our hunting seasons for both deer and elk. And then we'll talk a little bit about the multi-season permit application and sales history. I'll give you my summary of what we've heard to date about the program and about the proposal that's in front of you. Also talk a little bit about, I know there's been quite a bit of discussion and thoughts about the success rates for these types of permit holders and compare that to other types of hunters. And then I'll summarize with the recommendation from the department. So back in the 80s, I was working with the department at that point as well. We started back in the early 80s discussing and starting to develop seasons for some of what were considered the primitive weapon users, so archers and muzzleloaders. At that point, you could purchase a general tag, either deer or elk tag, but then you could also purchase an extra a document, in some cases called a stamp, to hunt in some of the archery and muzzleloader seasons that were available outside of the general hunting seasons. And there weren't very many of those. We started with very, very few back in 1983, but then in 1984 we started to add more and more, and at one point there were 30 or 40 units that were open early for archers and muzzleloaders, and then later on continued to add some and included some late seasons as well. I think part of that was designed to provide some additional opportunity for some of the primitive weapon users. But in addition, we were looking to try to reduce some of the crowding that was evident during the opening weekends, especially of the modern firearm season. So we were, again, like I said, we were experimenting a little bit, trying to reduce that crowding. By 1989, that's when we started requiring folks to choose a weapon for deer or elk hunting. And then we also started to really broaden the number of game management units and the number of geographic areas in the state that were open or had their own special seasons for those other weapon types. So then through the 90s and even into the early 2000s, we continued to look at what was happening with the number of users that were choosing to use archery equipment and those choosing to use muzzleloaders versus the numbers that were staying with the modern firearm seasons, and making adjustments to try to make sure that there was plenty of opportunity for those users. We currently have the majority of the game management units. There's 136 game management units right now, and the majority of those are open for archers and muzzleloaders. Depending on the early season versus the late season, there's a bit of a dichotomy in trying to keep folks, trying to balance all of the season time frame, September 1 to mid-December, and give everybody opportunity. It has been a big part of that mix. Some of the other questions we get often are what's happening with tag sales over time, and if you can see from this slide that back in 1985 we sold about 180,000 deer licenses, and in 2010 we sold about 156,000, so certainly a decline there over time, but not nearly as dramatic as you when you hear other statistics about hunter number declines. In the state of Washington, a lot of that is attributed to small game license loss of small game license sales and participation. So as you can see on the elk side, we've actually increased the number of elk licenses sold over time. I think some of that's a reflection of some of the varieties of opportunities we have, but also the health of our elk population. So how do we do with hunter crowding? Currently, well, remember that we went from about 150,000 deer tags and/or licenses sold. So instead of having 150,000 people out on opening weekend of Modern Farm, we still have 122,000, or the majority of those at least go out on opening weekend. And so it's still there's still some crowding there. But obviously, with 24,000 archers and 10,000 muzzleloader hunters, we have effectively reduced some of that crowding. It's currently roughly about, for deer tags and licenses, it's currently about 16% archers, 6% muzzleloaders, and of course the remainder, or 78%, modern firearm hunters. Then for elk licenses, probably a little better job there in terms of dividing up the users and reducing crowding. So with elk hunters, it's 21% archers, 13% muzzleloaders, and 66% modern firearm hunters in 2010 at least. We started this program of allowing some folks to purchase this permit, this multi-season permit, so that they could hunt all three seasons if they so chose, back in 2006. And you can see that while it's fluctuated, the number of deer and/or elk license or applications sold has been fairly steady, at least in recent years, between 8,000 and 9,000 applications. And then we have steadily adjusted the number of deer permits available for sale and the number of elk permits available for sale, and you can see a relatively steady increase in those numbers and that participation. So we've learned a lot. We've changed the application process. We've tried to streamline the ability for people to actually purchase their license. It is a fairly expensive license. It's $160. That's the base price, in addition to a standard deer or elk license. So most hunters are putting out well over $200 for this permit, in addition to their general deer or elk permit or license. In general, hunters have been pretty supportive. I think that they were pretty excited initially when we started this program, the multi-season program. We'd had lots of folks that wanted to be able to hunt longer, and there was a keen interest in that. We've been trying to provide a variety of opportunities for folks depending on their interest, and so this was just one more of those different varieties of opportunity. About that, you know, I mean, we had expanded archery muzzleloader seasons significantly, so there was plenty of time frame there for extending your season. I spoke about that earlier, where the seasons currently, archery seasons start 1st of September for deer, and many of the late seasons run through December 8th or 15th, and even some on the west side through the 31st. So quite a bit of time available there if folks have the time. We think we've addressed the crowding issues fairly well with the with the choose your weapon or the allocation system. We also think that the harvest impacts are manageable, and I'm going to show you some statistics, at least some stuff that I looked at here in the last couple of weeks, my staff, trying to determine if we thought there were any issues associated with that. So recent comments leading up to today's meeting, you know, lots of folks think that, yes, this is a great opportunity for, if you have the time, you can participate. Others think it's too expensive and it caters to only to those folks who can afford it. Quite a bit of criticism that we're just trying to raise more funds, and of course in the economic situation that we're in, we're probably guilty of that. We've just seen a fee increase for all recreational licenses. On top of that, we changed the way that we apply for permits, and that, and the rationale or a big piece of that was also to increase the funding. In that case, it was specific, or it was, we were looking at trying to increase the funding for our hunter access program. And then part of the rationale for this increase for expanding the multi-season permits was to allow us to expand our wildlife conflict, especially our deer and elk wildlife conflict specialists around the state to help us address those issues. And so at this point, the that particular legislative issue is not moving forward, but that was a big part of why we wanted to start this. And I think this will help us strengthen the wildlife fund and determine and continue to pursue this issue with the legislature. We also had some hunters say, well, why don't you reduce the fee, and then you'll get more participation, you get more people to buy your permits. And then lots of other ideas about how to make the program more attractive to hunters and purchasing those multi-season permits. But in all, general support for this expansion of the permit numbers. So this is just to show some examples of kind of the differences between the different hunter types, if you will, or groupings of hunters. And so we looked at success rates on a statewide basis for multi-season permit holders. And in 2009 and 2010, that was pretty close, pretty similar. So for deer hunters, if you were drawn and purchased and hunted during the multi-seasons or multiple seasons, your success rate's about 38%, 37%. That's still quite a bit less than the permit hunters. And so in 2009, that was before we changed to the categories, you know, on the permit side, we just kind of averaged that, and it was about 46%. Now that we have so many categories, it's such a broad spread in terms of success rates for permit hunters that it wasn't a fair comparison. We have some of our quality hunts where the hunter success is between 50% and 100%, but then some of our antlerless categories where it's 30 to 50%. So, but in general, permit hunters tend to be quite a bit more successful than these multi-season permits. But then you get down to the general season hunters, and so those folks that either didn't get drawn for either of the two above categories, and you see that their success rates are quite a bit lower, at least on a statewide basis. On the elk side, it's similar. Multi-season permits have ranged between 28% and 21%. Again, permit hunters tend to be quite a bit more successful, but then general season hunters tend to be quite a bit less successful. And so these were the kinds of concerns that we had heard about and that you, I'm sure, have heard about as well. But all in all, because we've limited the numbers, we don't think that that's a very big issue. So I decided to look at the other issue that you'll hear is concern about distribution. So if you've got 850 elk hunters out there, are they all coming to the Clackam and going to cause us some issues in terms of harvest levels? And so what we looked at was the kind of the distribution of hunters, and it was pretty well spread across the state. I think people who buy these multi-season permits tend to hunt where they would normally have hunted anyway. And so I grabbed a few of the more popular deer hunting GMUs. and put them up here, GMU 117 in Northeast Washington. There's about 3,200 general season deer hunters and about 53 folks that drew the deer permit, the multi-season permit in 2010 that chose to hunt up there. So, or about 1.6% of the total hunter numbers in that unit. Yeah, it's also important to remember that the reason I used 2010 was because we had increased the permit levels, and so I wanted to make sure that we used the highest levels that were out there. And so you can see, it is kind of interesting, about the only trend that I could see here, because most of the time the multi-season permit holders are less than 2.5% of the total hunters in a given GMU, but one of the interesting things was that they tend to be higher on the west side, even though the majority of hunters tend to be on the east side. So I don't know if that means anything. It's just something that was interesting, an interesting statistic that we saw. And so also wanted to look at success rates within those different GMUs to see if there was anything of note. And as you can see, it's kind of bounces around. There are some GMUs where actually the general season hunters were more successful than multi-season permit holders. But in a lot of cases, the sample size is so small that you really can't make good correlations or good connections between the two. But you can see it jumps around. And so, but in general, in most cases, pretty reasonable. This is an Okanagan area, GMU 224. That's probably the biggest difference, at least, that jumped out in the 2010 statistics. So we switched to elk, and you can see that because, remember, there are fewer elk permit, multi-season permits available, and so naturally they would make up a smaller percent of the elk hunters in a given GMU. And so again, I just grabbed some of the more popular elk units and compared those. And so again, the range is almost always less than 2%. And again, Western Washington tends to have a little higher percentage of multi-season hunters than some of the Eastern Washington units. Part of that is probably because of our management technique, which in the east side is spike only, on the west side is 3-point or better. So that's probably driving some of that participation rate. But again, nothing striking, nothing that would cause concern. And so hunter success, one anomaly here, and again, the only reason I put this in here was just to drive home the issue that fairly small sample size. This was three hunters. Two of them happened to kill an elk, so it drove the statistics up pretty high. So they're not very comparable. But again, when you look at some of these others, you see fairly comparable harvest rates depending on the situation and the GMU. Get this slide out of sequence, but in summary, the bottom line is that nothing, even though this text is red, nothing that we have seen really raises a red flag in terms of our ability to manage harvest and to manage our populations based on these multi-season permit holders. And so we plan to continue to monitor the results and have our district biologist take a look at these and watch them. If we see anything out of the ordinary, we can always recommend changes in the future. And so again, our recommendation is to increase the number of permits drawn to 8,500 for deer and 1,250 for elk. This should result, based on past experience, in the sales of about 4,600 deer permits and 1,000 elk permits. As I mentioned, we'll continue to work with the legislature in the future to see if we can authorize the expenditure of some of that money to expand our wildlife conflict program. And we'll continue to monitor participation. So take any questions.
Great. Very good. Questions? Commissioner Jennings?
In the last public comment period, we had an individual talk about special hunts and two permits and forfeiting one and opting out. Can you discuss that a little bit from your perspective?
You bet. We talked about this a little bit. February, last February or March, I can't remember, when I kind of gave a rundown on what, at least kind of the early read on all those category changes that we made. And there were quite a few folks that had drawn two permits, more than I expected, certainly, but I think in some cases some folks were a little bit concerned about the number. And I can't remember the number, but several hundred folks drew two permits. And for deer, we give out about 5,000 permits, and for elk, about the same. And so with that, I misspoke. I think it's 15,000 permits for deer. But anyway, so with that number, you know, still not a big concern. But we recognize that as part of that changing of all those categories, that point levels in a lot of those categories were pretty high. And so somebody with a lot of points, if they chose to apply for multiple categories, had a pretty good chance of being drawn. And we were looking to see, we recognized that a lot of those point categories or point totals would change over time, and this would actually help that change. In addition, there are some folks that are pretty sophisticated in the permits that they apply for, and so they may apply for a quality permit at one time, in one time frame, and an analyst permit in another time frame. Or we had quite a few, we had over 4,000 second deer permits available as well. So somebody might draw a second deer permit as well as a quality permit or as well as an analyst permit. And so it's not quite as simple as just asking folks to turn back in their second permit. The other thing is that the time frame necessary to do a second drawing, the way that Washington at least currently conducts our drawings, is pretty much time prohibitive. It takes us a couple of months to get our initial drawing done the way it is, and we always have concerns from hunters about how long it takes us to notify hunters, and so that they can take time off from work and schedule their hunts and do their scouting and all those kinds of things. And so further complication with that. We also don't have a mechanism in place that would allow us to conduct a second drawing at this time. Certainly we could do that, and we received a lot of suggestions, as you can imagine, on ways to deal with those, with people who draw multiple permits and don't want the second one. But I'd like to give it a little more time just to see if it kind of evens out over time. My guess is we're going to, the number of multiple permits will go down over time, naturally anyway. So we'd like to take a look at that and see how it goes.
Mr. Schmidt.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Dave. Based on the calls that I've had in Eastern Washington from hunters, I think we still got a ways to go to sell this concept yet. And these aren't necessarily my comments. I jotted down some of the notes that I had. But, you know, first of all, they acknowledge in Eastern Washington both our white-tailed deer herds and all of our elk, Blues and the Clackam, are not robust. The elk are not meeting all the objective standards that we have for them. So there's concern just about the health of those populations. Second, they indicate that, you know, hunters are pretty smart. They know the better areas to go to. They're going to seek those out. They allow weather to help them. And using those advantages, plus acknowledging, they said that the multiple species permit holders have a higher harvest rate. You know, can the herd sustain 100% extra permits for deer and about 50% for elk? So the two boil down to two concerns that I wrote down are, first, crowding in already crowded areas. I think you've noted this, but Antioch, for instance, was raised a couple different times, the Clackam. Second is increasing the new level of harvest in already fragile populations. So those are the two things that I think that you need to be able to address well to gain the hearts and minds of the hunters, especially in the east side.
Sure, thanks. I did try to address most of those, or many of those, in the slide presentation, and I know that you've received a hard copy, but it also will be up on the web for folks to look at as well.
Great.
Commissioner Dubia.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I've been a proponent of increasing these since I've been on the commission, and I think there's a story behind the numbers that, at least is my opinion. One, the person that puts in for the multi-season tag is usually a little better hunter and a little more dedicated individual, and his success rate probably hasn't changed one bit by being a multiple tag holder. He's going to take an animal with or without the mobile tag. So though it shows them with a higher success rate, if you went back and found out their history, there probably would be very little change in his success rate. It's a significant cost to most of the blue-collar people or diehard hunters for going after this, and so they get a little more committed if they do, but they are also been committed usually as an avid hunter. And as far as crowding goes, those mobile tag hunters are coming from the 80% of the people that rifle hunt. So the more we offer, the less crowded we get. The crowding is in the rifle season. And so the more we offer multiple season opportunities, maybe we drag some of that 80% out into a small fraction. And over the time that we've had this program, we have lost more hunters than there are in archery and muzzleloading. So our decrowding system, we've got less hunters, has been achieved more or as much by not being keeping our hunting population up. So, and this is one way that really does enhance people to come back in. I'm, for one, rifle hunt. I used to bow hunt, but I have to make a choice, and Pam doesn't like to pull a bow, and she doesn't like not to kill something, so we rifle hunt together. But we only get 3 weekends most of the time. Where if I archery hunted, I could probably get 5 or 6 weekends. And for those who work, sometimes you don't get all 3 weekends available. So you get a lot more flexibility, and it's a lot more value added. And as we talked earlier, we have to continue to provide a better product. And I think one of the reasons we're losing hunters is because we're not giving them days in the woods, and that's what they want. Most of them aren't interested in always killing something. That's probably part of the success story. But if they can't spend a decent amount of time hunting, why do it? I mean, if you're going to do it 3 weekends a year, and it does cost a lot of money to get ready, do it, and all that other stuff. So, I think we even should, if we don't fill all of these multi-season tags, as in Montana, you put in for an out-state tag, if it's not filled, you can go back in and phone call in, and it's first come, first serve, and they sell the remaining quota, and it goes away in about 24 hours. So there's some easy solutions to fill, and it is a problem when you get drawn with two tags, two permits. These people have put in a lot of money, a lot of time trying to get a tag, and all of a sudden they got two, and they lose all their points. That just isn't right, and there's ways to correct that. I mean, that's not what we're trying to achieve. That's not good satisfaction. So I think we got to really try to figure that one out. And Bill, I know, is good about with this system, and we just got to challenge him to figure that out. So, but I think if I had my druthers, I would put a fee for every, if you want to hunt with rifle or archery or muzzleloading, I'd say it's $75 or $90 a season, and buy all three if you want. And I don't think we would do anything but decrease crowding, and I don't think it would change the opportunity that much. We might have to restrict it in some areas where we have population problems, but I think this is a very good step, and this is I don't consider it bad news. I think this is something that generates good revenue for the department, and it's helping to solve some problems so we can provide other opportunities. So this is a very success story. I think it's what the hunters want, and this helps the department, and I think it decreases crowding.
Other comments? Commissioner Perry.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about the, I guess it's the first sentence in the last paragraph under background on the green sheet. And it says the department is asking the 2012 legislature for authority to spend the anticipated revenue for expanding our wildlife conflict program. Is this money really to replace what we may not spend? Because I understood that the department was asking to suspend that program for the next biennium.
Maybe we're going to have to come back and talk at some point about the wildlife conflict program and how we're and what we're kind of where we're at in a transition right now. We're trying to transition, depending on whether we get funding. But it's the program that is described in the background in the green sheet there. The background information is has more to do with the use of wildlife conflict specialists to work with landowners to mitigate and or avoid damage as much or more than it is than it has anything to do with the payments of damage. And so the amount that we've gone to the legislature and asked them to suspend is strictly the amount for payments to landowners. So the rest of the program is ongoing, and we're still working with landowners on to mitigate conflict issues. We started 3 or 4 years ago using conflict specialists rather than our officers, because our officers are so torn between so many priorities that sometimes it's difficult for them to be as responsive as they might be for something like a wildlife conflict issue for a landowner. And so we hired 2 wildlife conflict specialists in the Yakima area, one in Yakima, one in Ellensburg, and that's their whole job, is to focus on helping us deal with conflict issues. I think it's helped us quite a bit in the, especially in the Ellensburg area, where we've been trying to, as was mentioned earlier, we've got an issue with that clockmurd, and the biggest solution was to kill them whenever they get into conflicts. And so as a result, we had some challenges trying to maintain the herd population at the level that we were trying to. Now, we finally, we are meeting our objectives for the total population, and as you'll hear in March, we're going to start recommending some analyst opportunity again for that herd, analyst harvest opportunity. So our ability to manage conflict is a big deal in terms of our ability to meet our herd objectives, and so that's why we're looking to expand that program into other parts of the priorities at this point, mostly in Eastern Washington, but that's the intent of this program in a nutshell.
Thank you. I support that program a lot. I think it's very effective, particularly the one-on-one that they're able to do with farmers and ranchers out there that potentially would have damage. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I also support the conflict specialist concept. It's a much more efficient use of agency resources than having an enforcement officer out there doing this sort of work. So it makes a lot of sense. I think we tested the concept. It worked well. So I was happy to see that that's where you're targeting. You're asking permission to target the funding into that activity. Terrific. Okay. Now, when do we make a decision on this?
Next month. So
next month.
You just have the public testimony wraps this agenda item up.
Great. Anything else? Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Dave.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Public hearing now? We open the public hearing. Has anyone signed up? No one has signed up. We closed the public hearing. Okay. Now we need a break. We're way behind schedule, so I'm going to have a little discussion with the deputy director about how we might rearrange the agenda a bit, because we're so far behind, there's no way we're going to catch up. Maybe we can defer one of these items to Saturday or to February. So come back in 15 minutes.